All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and our guest for this half hour is Bob Barr. He's a former federal prosecutor and congressman from Georgia, and he now fights for the Bill of Rights freelance as a writer for United Press International, Creative Loafing Atlanta, and his own website, bobbarr.org. He works with the American Conservative Union and the American Civil Liberties Union. He hosts his own radio show, Bob Barr's Laws of the Universe, and is the author of the book, The Meaning of Is, The Squandered Impeachment and Wasted Legacy of William Jefferson Clinton. Thank you very much for joining us this Saturday afternoon, Mr. Barr.
Well, it's great to be with you. It makes it sound like I'm real busy with all of that stuff you read off there.
Oh, don't tell me you're just retired sitting back in your recliner.
I know. I'm just sitting here in a hammock with a mint julep. That's what I do all the time.
Yeah, right. That was the impression I got from your secretary, is that you have nothing but free time on your hands there.
Yeah. But I tell you, one reason why I'm delighted to be with you all today is because the issues that we're going to be talking about and that you deal with day in and day out are just so important. The issues of our sovereignty, our constitutional rights, our rights to privacy in this country are just so important, and we're in such danger of losing them. So every opportunity we can have to talk about them and educate people as to the dangers of losing these freedoms is something that's extremely important for all of us to do.
I definitely agree with that, and I sure appreciate your effort on that front. And speaking of which, let's go ahead and cut right to it. The Washington Post and the Toronto Star are reporting that, quote the Post, the Bush administration is supporting a provision in the House leadership's intelligence reform bill that would allow U.S. authorities to deport certain foreigners to countries where they are likely to be tortured. They call this the extraordinary rendition, and it has already happened to a young man in Canada named Maher Arar, who was exported to Syria for torture and held for a year. So my question to you, sir, is does not George W. Bush deserve impeachment and removal from office more than any president since, I don't know, Franklin Roosevelt?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but what is of concern to me is that these provisions are being proposed. That particular provision was proposed over a year ago in a draft, what I dubbed the Son of Patriot Act, that would take the Patriot Act to a whole new level. And they're being proposed by this administration and by its supporters on the Hill in various forums. And they say that, well, these things are necessary to fight terrorism, which is hogwash. We don't need to torture people. We don't need to hold people incommunicado for years and years and years. We don't need to deny people the right to go before a judge or have access to an attorney just to fight terrorists. We can do so, and we ought to be proud to fight terrorists within the context and the confines of our Bill of Rights. Yet there are so many of these proposals. Just this one is just the tip of the iceberg. And if we're not careful and fight the administration and its supporters on the Hill on these things, we're going to see these sorts of things be enacted. And I'm particularly worried about that if President Bush gets a second term.
Well, just the other day, an Englishman claimed that he was tortured and witnessed murders at Guantanamo. And now basically they're trying to legalize this after the fact.
Well, two things that we need to be doing. One, of course, is what we're doing on this radio show right now, and that is to fight these issues publicly, to make sure that people are aware of the dangers and to do everything we can to rally support among the people of this country and their representatives in opposition to these expansions of federal power. The second thing we have to do is fight them in the courts. We've actually had a couple of very significant court victories in the last year. You mentioned, Guantanamo. The Supreme Court just a few months ago rendered a very important decision that said the administration cannot hold somebody indefinitely simply by calling them an enemy combatant and deny them even the most rudimentary access to the courts. The Supreme Court says you can't do that. Fighting terrorism does not give the executive, it said, a blank check to ignore the Constitution. The second decision we had, and this was not a Supreme Court case yet, but just a few days ago, you might have seen a decision out of a district court, federal district court in New York, which held a provision in the Patriot Act unconstitutional. So some of these cases are now finally working their way through the system, and although we've had some bad decisions, we are now starting to see some good decisions. So that's the other form that we need to be supportive of, to support the organizations such as the ACLU that are bringing these actions against provisions of the Patriot Act, against the enemy combatant provisions, and so forth.
Well, now, the ACLU, and worry about Bush being reelected. Bob Barr, you haven't turned into some liberal pinko on us, have you?
No, but I have retained my stripes, which I'm very proud of, as a strict constitutionalist who believes in the right to privacy as the underpinning of our Bill of Rights. And if there are organizations such as the ACLU, with which I disagree on a whole range of issues, don't get me wrong, I disagree with them on a lot of what they do, but for several years now, I and other conservatives have joined forces with the ACLU on these particular issues, the issues regarding protecting our Bill of Rights and protecting our right to privacy. And the ACLU, for example, brought this case in New York that held a provision in the Patriot Act that allowed the government to get access without any sort of court supervision to internet records of individuals, unconstitutional. So, we need to chastise the ACLU when it goes off on these ridiculous cases, such as finding that there's, the kids have a right to access to pornography, for example, or some of their positions on mind-altering drugs, or their issues on religion. But I tell you, they have been a very powerful ally with conservative groups in fighting some of these provisions, such as those that you just mentioned.
Well, I would love to have a fight with you sometime about mind-altering drugs, but I'm going to have to put that issue off since we only have a half-hour interview here, and the war on drugs has got to take a backseat to the war on terrorism on this show. Hamdi and Padilla, this is the big deal, right? This is where the Justice Department basically turned these guys over to the Pentagon, and now we find out that they've made a deal. They're going to send Hamdi home. So they've been holding this guy as being so dangerous that they had to put him in a military brig this whole time, and now they're just going to let him go.
This is really the ultimate irony, Scott. I'm glad you mentioned that case, because it's one thing if the government really has evidence that an individual is engaged in military action against us or acts of terrorism against us. Now, I still believe that if they're a U.S. citizen or they're arrested in this country and they're here lawfully, that they have a right to access to our court system to fight those charges. But if, in fact, as we're now finding out, these people that the government claimed were enemy combatants, the government claimed were terrorists, and they have held basically incommunicado for 3 years now, now once they're forced to put up or shut up, they have no evidence against them and they're having to release them, this is really a tremendous abuse of the government's power. To hold somebody without evidence against them for 3 years and then say, oh, sorry, the court made us put up the evidence and we don't have any, so sorry, Charlie, goodbye.
Well, you know, they've kind of admitted all along that Padilla is innocent, basically. I mean, Ashcroft gave his big press conference about the dirty bomb plot and whatever, but it was leaked by FBI agents within a couple of weeks of him being turned over to the Navy that this guy didn't have any bomb materials, he didn't have any expertise, he didn't have any money, he didn't have any contacts, that this was all basically an Ashcroft fantasy, and that really the reason they turned him over to the Navy was because they didn't have anything they could convict him of.
Exactly. And one has to ask how many more individuals there are that we don't know about, or who simply haven't been able to get their case before the public so the public knows about it. This is very, very frightening for any administration to be able to essentially ignore the Bill of Rights and do whatever they want with whoever they want without that person having any access whatsoever to the court system to at least challenge whether or not their initial detention is lawful or not.
Yeah, well, and this is the United States of America, right? This isn't Eastern Europe or Africa or South America somewhere with a fascist dictatorship. This is America with the Constitution,
well,
and the Bill of Rights. And
I'm a little bit worried about the president's close friendship with Vladimir Putin. During the debate the other night, he kept referring to this guy by his first name, you know, like he's some long-lost buddy. Putin is not doesn't have any regard, I don't think, at all for civil liberties either. And this this close friendship that we see developing here worries me a little bit.
Yeah, the thing that most worries me, really along those very same lines, Bush acting like a Russian, the September 11th commission recommendations. I have a feeling that these bills aren't really any more known to the congressman voting for them than the Patriot Act.
You're probably right on that score also. I did read the Patriot Act, went over it very carefully with a number of other groups and a number of my colleagues on the Judiciary Committee at the time. But I'd have to tell you that the vast majority of members of Congress in both houses did not read that, and more than likely very few of them have read the 9/11 follow-up bills.
All right, hang tight right there. Bob Barr will be right back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I am Scott Horton, and my guest is former Congressman and former federal prosecutor Bob Barr. Mr. Barr, do you take responsibility for voting to let George Bush decide whether or not to invade Iraq?
I think that it was a very, very precipitous move. No, I don't take any responsibility for it. I think that there were actually much better ways to handle the problems in Iraq, far short of invading the nation. I think that there certainly were appropriate steps that we could have taken, black operations with the Central Intelligence Agency using indigenous forces over there that could have had a much higher rate of success without getting us bogged down in occupying a nation on the other side of the world and spending hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer monies from this country that could be used either to go back into the pockets of the taxpayers who earned it or to have beefed up our security here. There's so much we could be doing at home that we're not doing because we're spending all of this money to make the Iraqis secure, and we're failing at that.
In fact, Mr. Anonymous CIA agent Mike Schurer, the author of Imperial Hubris, Why the West is Losing the War on Terror, he says that George W. Bush is the best thing that ever happened to Osama bin Laden.
Well, it certainly has created a rallying cry, a recruitment tool. You know, and I certainly think that we should be going after these terrorists, both individually and in their organizational capacity. I think that there is much that we did, not everything, but much that we did in Afghanistan post 9/11 that was very appropriate and very worthwhile. This business of declaring that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and that Saddam Hussein was pulling the strings of the terrorists and so forth just is not true. And there ultimately, I don't believe, was an appropriate basis on which to invade Iraq. And even if there was an appropriate basis, we certainly did not execute the post-war strategy, if there was one.
Which this sort of brings me back to my original question, which was, why is it that William Jefferson Clinton deserved to be impeached and removed from office and George Bush does not? I mean, when you talk about lies, lying about ties between Saddam and al-Qaeda as a pretext for war is surely more serious than lying in a civil deposition about an affair.
Well, I'm not sure it's quite that simple. To me, William Jefferson Clinton deserved to be impeached, and I go into great detail in my book, The Meaning of Is, about this on other grounds. I think there were far more serious things that he did on which he should have been impeached. But,
and, of course, I agree with you about that, by the way.
Yeah, and I wish our Republican leadership had moved much more quickly on that. But they didn't, and they moved only on the basis of the obstruction and the perjury, which is an appropriate basis on which he should have been impeached. He violated, specifically violated, the laws of this country, the criminal laws of this country. With George W. Bush, I think we're talking, at least from what I know thus far, about something different. We're talking essentially about policy decisions that were made. And I've never believed that any president should be impeached based on policy decisions.
No matter how much in violation of the Constitution those decisions are?
Well, I'm not sure that what the president is doing over in Iraq is in violation of the Constitution. In what sense do you view it as in violation of the Constitution, Scott?
Well, first of all, it should have been you guys in the Congress to declare war, not to give the authority to him to decide. But secondly, I look at the Constitution strictly, I look at the 10th Amendment, and if Congress does not, or the President, if they do not have the enumerated power to go invading countries that have never attacked us, then they don't have that power.
Well, I guess I would disagree with you on that. I think that as a sovereign nation, we do have that power. I don't view it as something unconstitutional if a president does that and we disagree with it. I do think that what has happened here is very bad policy decisions have been made, and I do think there were liberties with the truth that were taken. But if we start saying that any president should be impeached simply because they aren't being completely truthful, then we'd really be getting ourselves in the situation where every single president would be impeached, and I don't think we want to go there.
Well, I wouldn't mind, but that's okay, though. We could disagree about that. Back to the Clinton thing. Last time we spoke, I asked you about why was it that the Republicans decided, particularly in the Senate, decided to strictly go after the Lewinsky charges as opposed to the rest of Bill Clinton's violations of the law. And your answer to me then was basically you didn't really know, but the leadership made the call. Well, I've since read a book by an interviewed Greg Palast, who writes for the BBC, and he told me that there was a deal made between Tom Daschle and Trent Lott that said, listen, if you guys don't investigate all the Koch brothers' money coming into the Republican campaigns for Congress, then we will stop our China investigation before it gets to impeachable offenses. And I'm sorry I ran that all the way up to the end. We'll be right back and I'll let you answer that.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
I wear it for another 100,000 who have died, believing that we all were on their side. Well, there's things that never will be
right. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and the guest is Bob Barr. Now, I apologize for being so hard on you, sir, but I'm a really big fan, and so I decided that.
Hey, listen, I've put up with Larry Flint and James Carville and Bill Clinton. This isn't hard at all. These are very, very good questions, Scott. And you and I may disagree on some aspects of some of these issues, but no, these are very important topics, and I think it's very important to talk about them and educate your many listeners.
Well, great, and I sure appreciate your willingness. And I know you have to go soon here. I just have a couple more questions. Now, before we went to the break, for anybody just joining in, we were talking about why is it that the leadership of the Republican Party in 1998 decided to go after Clinton on the Lewinsky matter only and dropped the most important things, such as money for technology transfers to China and that kind of thing. And I was explaining to Mr. Barr that when I talked to the reporter Greg Palast, he says he has inside sources who were there in the room when a handshake was made between, I know it was Tom Daschle on the side of the Democrats, and I believe Trent Lott, the senators, that they decided that because the Koch brothers had donated so much illegal money to the Republicans' congressional takeover in 1994, that they would make a deal that they would not investigate the China situation to its end if the Democrats would promise to leave the Koch brothers thing alone. And so my question to you, Bob Barr, is whether you know anything about that, whether that's true or not, et cetera, like that.
I don't know anything about that, so I have no way to comment on it. I have not heard that, and I would kind of doubt that. I can tell you, though, Scott, that there was other information and other instances in which I and some others on the Government Reform and Oversight Committee under Chairman Dan Burton's leadership wanted to explore what we clearly believed were illegal campaign donations coming in from some Chinese companies and some multinational companies with ties and money coming in from Communist China. And our leadership would not allow us to use the powers of the Congress, the committees, to investigate that. And the reason was that many of our members, Republican members, particularly a number of them on the West Coast, had also taken money from these corporations and entities with ties to China.
I see. And speaking of which, and I apologize, I hadn't read the book. I'm so much more interested nowadays in what's going on with the Patriot Act and your work on that, that I haven't even gotten a chance to get your book. But people should know it's called The Meaning of Is, The Squandered Impeachment and Wasted Legacy of William Jefferson Clinton. I can't wait to get my hands on that, if I can ever find some time to read it. and last question for you here. I know you have to go, but this is something that we also spoke about before, and that it occurred to me in my introduction to you here that you're working with the American Conservative Union and the American Civil Liberties Union at the same time in order to protect the Bill of Rights. And that brings up to me the idea of a brand new realignment where we can perhaps finally scrap modern liberalism and modern conservatism and get back to the idea that the real political spectrum is between liberty and slavery, and that those of us who really just want to be free are the wannabe free party, and everybody else is the party of the state. What do you say to that?
I would join in that effort with tremendous enthusiasm, Scott. I am so disappointed in the traditional party structure that we now have, and it's simply more often than not simply a matter of degree, the difference between the National Republicans and the National Democrat Party. And I have spoken, and even though, as you touched on earlier, we have somewhat of a disagreement on illegal drugs, I'm a strong supporter of the Libertarian Party. I spoke at their national convention in Atlanta this past summer.
Great speech.
And am a very strong proponent of their efforts. And if we could affect and work toward a basic realignment, so it's basically freedom versus those who favor control by the state, I think we would be working a historic benefit for the American people.
Are you going to vote for Michael Badnark?
No comment.
Very diplomatic. Very diplomatic. All right. I know you got to go, sir, and I just want to thank you very much for your time today.
Scott, thank you, as always. And I have to say, in answer to your last question, I am very, very impressed with Michael Badnarik. I know him. I've talked with him and think very, very highly of him. And I wish that he were a part of the presidential debates.
Is there a chance you're going to run for Congress again?
No, I have no interest in that. I view that as a tremendous honor, but it's a phase of my life that is gone. And I'm very happy working for those same issues in different forums and enjoying it even more.
Excellent. Well, and you're doing a hell of a bang-up job doing it, too. Everybody, Bob Barr, he writes for United Press International, Creative Loafing Atlanta, and definitely check out his website, bobbarr.org. It's two R's in bar, if you don't know. And check out his radio show, Bob Barr's Laws of the Universe, syndicated in a town near you somewhere.
On the Radio America Network.
On the Radio America Network. All right. Thank you very much for coming on the show today, sir.
Thank you, Scott. You take care now.
You too.